Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. Sorry, listeners, we lost our phone connection there due to causes unknown. So we'll just plough straight on. So, yeah, Paul, you were talking about Vislink.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, basically, Vislink sells software and hardware, clever upload download links to be able to capture images at the point of event, whether that is on sort of a police arrest or it's basically a large sport event like the World Cup, etc. And then be able to transfer the content very efficiently and securely through the TV systems and through the television.
Mm.
Anyway, it's a lot of high tech equipment, and it's trading on around about a P of about 11, I think, something like that.
Yes.
But they came out with some, frankly, blockbuster, after we spoke last time, some blockbuster H2 numbers, and the share price increased, and they've come out with a positive outlook. And since then, they've also won a flagship agreement with GoPro, and they've solidified their position with a company called Harmonic, which is another sort of industry-leading business out in the States. And the share prices have moved up over 50p. It's about sort of, I think, about 55p now.
Spike up to just over 60, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I own a lot of shares in this. So, you know, I believe that the business is going to do well. But I actually, coming back, I think not only will it do well organically, but it will also do well. It could well be taken out, you know, at some point in time by.
Yeah.
But as much for the software as anything, I think they bought this software business called Pebble Beach last year for about just less than £9 million, I think. When I valued it after the full year results, if you just used a modest, and I'm talking very modest, software multiple on Pebble Beach, and then just almost ignored the growth and just did the GDP growth, which would be really, really conservative, you're getting a valuation of £50 million.
Really?
So, yeah. It demonstrates the track record for acquisitions is first rate, because it's a very good one with GigaWave when they reached, it was about 2009, which was basically, it was televising things like MotoGP, and that has got them into the GoPro deal, you see. So anyway, the business at currently about 55p is only worth, market cap is about 60, 65 million. So you're almost getting everything on the software side, you know, and then the rest of the business for free. So I think at some point that will be a takeover. I mean, clearly any small cap is not without risk. And as I say, I own quite a few shares. I know you're less positive on it, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know the company a lot better than me, I would say. So your view is probably better than mine. But I read the accounts and I thought they were rather disappointing, actually, in terms of the original business. Seems to be the acquisitions were covering up the fact that really the existing businesses were struggling, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. The existing business didn't do so well last year in just straight broadcast. The surveillance side equipment did well, but the broadcast did less well. But I think the reason why I'm positive about it is looking towards the future. I mean, if you look at the opportunities coming off the back of the GoPro deal, they are immense. You know, you've not only got this sort of like using the technology in different sporting events, you can also use exactly the same technology for things like, you know, on-body police cameras. And this is a potentially a $1 billion market just in the States alone.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of people doing that, though, aren't there? I mean, actually, enough, IndiaVision have launched a body-worn camera as well, actually. They might be a good buy for business, Vislink. Maybe I should put the two CEOs in touch.
Yeah, possibly. But the distinction I'm making, though, on things like on-body cameras, which there's a lot of people in it, which I totally agree. Things like Taser, and there's another big business out in the States which does it as well.
Okay.
All the current on-body cameras are effectively dumb terminals. They just capture video, and then you have to download it onto, you know, onto your
service. The Vislink one can transmit it over the phone, though.
It smart enables it. And there isn't anyone which is a smart neighbor. So there'll be one player, but anyway, so they're reasonably well positioned in that. And I also think
how much does the product cost, the Vislink body worn camera? Do you know?
They don't sell the camera; they sell the clever technology which will go into the camera, which will smart enable it.
Okay. Yeah.
You see, another thing that obviously for airborne unmanned aerial vehicles.
Yes.
So, you know, basically drones flying around. They're anything in line of sight, you can just use a straight aerial. You know, if you had an individual, like a consumer one. But anything you want to be able to do things like delivering Amazon, you know, drones, those type of things, you can't just have, there's no line of sight. So you need to have a smart camera on there.
Oh, right, okay.
Anyway, so I think I mean, like anything, nothing is a slam dunk. There's always risks on everything else, you know, on every stock. But I do think Vislink has got the technology to do well going forward. Whether it does or not is another kettle of fish. But anyway, so that one.
Okay. Maybe I'll buy those back then if they dip back down to my selling price. I sold out at 50p.
Yeah.
So, mind you, if I'm only quibbling over 5 or 6p, I might just, I'll have a
sound
think
like, you sound as though you're nickel and diming there.
Yeah, I am a bit.
My fair value on Vislink is about 80p, I think it is. So I think there's still plenty of upside to go. The one which has done really well is Tristel,
that's put out a series of very good announcements.
Yeah, and then on last week it said that it was putting out a special dividend of 3p a share, which has sent the share price now to its all time high of £1.
Yeah. Oh, ticker TSTL for Tristel. Yeah.
No, I
really like that one. Well done on that, because you've been bullish on that for quite a while.
Well, I got in at about, I don't know, 30p, and I've got quite a few shares, so, but I haven't sold any at all. And I still think there's room to go higher. And I think I get to a fair value of a £1.10, but that's based on just,
where they are now.
Yeah, just and I actually think it could, you know, if it cracks the US market, then this could double easily.
Yes.
Because, simply because the US market is as big as anywhere else in the world.
No, I like this one. It's what, I mean, sometimes people accuse me of being sort of too focused on the PE ratio, but, you know, I think the PE just tells you where you are now, doesn't it? But I think if you look forward and you can see much, much stronger profits coming through in the future, then it's worth paying a PE of 20 or even more for a stock, isn't
it? Yeah, well, I think
it'll grow into that valuation, and before you know it, it's down to a PE of 12 and the shares shoot up.
So, yeah, and I think you have to look at it on a case by case, as you rightly say.
Yeah.
But particularly that applies, the principle you just described applies in healthcare, because you have patent protection and predictable earnings, and therefore you can be pretty sure that the direction of travel for the earnings stream in a patented, prescribed environment is going to be upwards. You know, is that direction is going to be held. So,
I like Tristel. I think you're onto a winner there. I should I tried to be a bit too clever on that one and trade the range when it was moving up and down between, I think it was sort of 60, no, was it 70 and 80p? It just repeatedly bounced that range, and I traded it for a profit each time, but I should have just held on for the bigger gain. I like that one too. But
I think you'll get bought out by somebody like Ecolab, its biggest competitor. Mm. But anyway, one thing I have to congratulate you on, Paul, is your tip which you put me on for Invesco. You know,
Avesco,
because it came out with some absolute ballistic results last week.
Was it last week or two weeks ago?
I can't remember.
A couple of weeks ago, I think. Yeah, this one, ticker AVS. That's been my best performer of the year so far. It's really gone through the roof, and it doesn't show. I think it's going high, you know.
No, I do as well. I mean, I think it's worth. I think. You introduced me to, you mentioned it when I was about £1.10, and I think, I mean, I struggled getting stock. It was really illiquid, but I've got a reasonable number of shares, and you know, certainly worth it. And now they're what, £1.90 or something?
Nearly £2. Yeah, they did actually briefly blip over £2.
Yeah.
Now you're right. The results were excellent. The interim results came out very, very big increase in profit. Although a lot of that was because the prior year had a big exceptional charge, I think. But it was more the outlook statement was very bullish as well.
Yeah.
And then the icing on the cake was an announcement that the chairman sold just under £1 million of the stock.
Yeah.
Now normally you'd think, oh, that's very negative. But it then went on to say that all of those shares had been bought by other directors of the company.
I know. You're exactly right.
Well,
that's very positive.
Bloody hell. That
I know.
Is amazingly bullish.
Yeah.
And there've even been a couple of very small follow-on director buys since then. So I mean, that says to me that I don't know what's happened to that company, but something transformational has obviously happened there.
Yeah. I mean, I just ran sort of provisional numbers, and I reckon I could get to a fair value of well over £2.50 on using, because obviously this does, for everybody, it rents out equipment, lighting and TV systems for exhibitions and events, you know, like
festivals
and stuff like that. And normal equipment rental multiples, if you look at the big ones, they're about 13 times EBITDA. And if you run, if you run a 10 times EBITDA multiple on through cycle, you know, last year's and this year's expected EBIT, which frankly I'm sure they're going to do for this year, then you get well over £2.50. So that's using a lower multiple on conservative multiples, you're still getting a price of over £2.50. And I'm with you. I think the direction of travel on this one, even though it's moved along a lot, you know, since you recommended it, well, not recommended, since you mentioned it, it's still going to be higher. So there's no way I'm selling that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'd originally penciled in £2 as a target price, but when I crunched the numbers again more recently, I think £3 to £4 is where it could go. I'm not saying that's going to happen overnight. You know, I'm thinking more with a year to 2 year hold. Because the other thing is, I compared it with other equipment hire businesses in different sectors, and they're generally on 2 to 4 times NAV, net rental asset value.
Yes.
Well, Invesco is only just over 1 times NAV. Yes. So on that supportive of, and the other thing is, when I bought in, I was getting a 6.5% dividend yield.
Yeah. I know.
And the divvies are rising. There's a lovely progression of divvies upwards, strongly upwards over the last few years. So I'm really excited about that one. So I haven't sold any of them either.
I think that's another, I mean, you know, you look at the, you know, the learning curves, you know, the learning points that we both sort of take from certain, and I know it's a sort of like a bit of a cliche, but running your winners when you worked out what you think the fair value is absolutely crucial, even though you may have doubled your price.
Definitely.
If you still believe, as long as it hasn't become such a large part of your portfolio, then you need to sort of like really wait. But as long as it's within a sensible sort of tolerance level for your risk profile, if it's doubled and you still think it's undervalued, then you're mad sort of like selling out, because it's still got a long way to go. You know, if there's a lot of positive, and it's very tempting sometimes to take profits early. You know, I mean, you talk about these sort of things, I tend to do the opposite sometimes. I tend to buy too early and sell too early, but, you know, you have to sort of like make decisions occasionally, you know, sort of stuff. But I do think with Invesco, you know, I think that one has still got further to run.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that one's very exciting. I'm looking back at it now and thinking, why the hell didn't I buy more?
We struggled buying them. Liquidity was tough as hell.
That's true. I mean, it took me about a month to accumulate a not very big position in it. Actually.
Yeah, that's what I did as well. I got as many as I could get and then just gave up. I said, I'm not always 9 o'clock trying to buy these shares. It's driving me nuts.
Yeah. And I mean, looking back, we probably should have just paid 10p over the offer price to get the stock we wanted. But
the problem is that with these, I mean, again, it's another one for investors just to be aware of, is that if you're not careful. And I mean, I think you buy probably a similar sort of, you know, level as I do, i.e. reasonably quite large positions. And if you're not careful, you end up just bidding yourself up. You know, you basically, you'll move the share price 10p, and then it'll go up a 10, and you're the only person buying. And that just frustrates the hell out of me. I think the best, if you've got, I think the best, I don't know about you, Greg, but perhaps a better approach is that if you do need a reasonable number of shares in a fairly liquid stock, you've probably got to contact the broker and look to see whether anybody's in a selling position, and therefore you might be able to pop something out or just be patient in that respect. Because
and sometimes ringing the company secretary is another route in, isn't it? Very often they might, or the FD, they might know a seller. Although the trouble is, the worst thing is when I got caught once where I bid for a line of stock in some really illiquid small cap, and I got the stock, and I was absolutely thrilled. And then the next day, an RNS came out, it was one of the bloody directors selling. Of course, the shares tanked. I can't remember which company it was,
luckily, I haven't done that, but I remember one which I had. I was buying this US small cap stuff that was in renewables, and They released some results out, quarter results. Great, I loved the balance sheet. Great, looks fantastic. So I put, I put about something like 50 grand or 60 grand or something like that into the stock, because I'd done a lot of research in the market and that sort of stuff. And then on a conference call an hour later, the directors just slagged the company off, and they then put that into the RNS, and the shares just like tanked in about, I lost about 30 grand in the space of about sort of 15 minutes, simply because, and the reason why I mention it is because it's another, you know, sort of like sort of lesson, I guess, for investors. You know, that was one lesson I learned, was that, you know, don't always assume your R and S gives you a full picture of the actual business. Because sometimes in small caps, they don't always follow the rules, or they don't know about the rules, and they do things strange. And I say this US business basically had all the negative news in the conference call and none of it in the main statement, and I, assumed they wouldn't know it. So, but that happens. That happens quite a lot. It's sort of like sometimes for the double due diligence you need to do, you need to speak to the company, or you need to do this. I know you can never have enough information, but it's sort of like another sort of potential black hole you can avoid if you're not careful.
Yeah, I mean, I always listen to conference calls if the company do them, and webinars and webcasts and things, but I think it's often the tone, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's the tone.
Yeah, I mean, I went to my biggest holding at the moment is Boohoo.com.
Oh, right.
Ticker BOO, the online.
Did it spook you at all?
Is it what?
Did it spook you at all, the conference call? No.
No, I actually went to an analyst meeting in at Buchanan Communications on the day of the results, and it was very well attended, actually, for a small cap. There's about 50-odd people there, I reckon. So it seems to be attracting quite a bit of broker and analyst interest.
Well, it's going through the roof, isn't it? As in, like, the business it's flying at.
The figures are great, the figures. I mean, I think it's for a growth stock and in a, you know, a sexy area of online retail, global as well. It's not just UK, but about a third of sales are overseas. I think it's really, really underpriced.
Yeah. Can you remember what's the peg ratio on it?
It's below one.
Below one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, if you strip out, you've got to bear in mind they've got a whacking rate cash pile. They've got nearly $60 million in net cash.
And yes.
Something really interesting the FD said. He said that they actually have I think he said it, a negative working capital. The business generates negative working capital as it expands because they're selling for cash to online.
Yes.
And they move the stock very rapidly. They do this test and repeat stocking strategy where they buy in. So they're ramming in dozens of new lines every day.
Yes.
It's phenomenal how many different garment options they have. Because it's all about newness. It's fast, almost disposable fashion, you know, for youngsters. So they ram through all these new product lines, and within minutes, they know, or hours, they know whether it's a winner or not, because they just look at the website. And if it's flying out the door, that same day, they put in a repeat order for 10,000 or 20,000 units. So it's a fantastic business model. Mm. Of course, they're getting maybe 60 days credit from the suppliers, but they're selling for cash.
Yes,
so what the FD said was, as the business grows, it's actually chucking out more cash. And they then, the margin, what they call the contribution margin, which is basically the operating profit before marketing costs. Mm. What do you reckon it would be in percentage terms?
Operating profit before marketing costs?
Yeah.
On a normal retailer, normal retailers, marketing costs are probably only like 3 or 4% of sales, and EBITA margins for normal retailers are typically 3, 4, 5% tops. So you probably look before marketing costs, don't they? Sort of like high single digits?
25%.
Oh, right, okay.
25% margins they make before marketing costs. So what they then do is they say, right, we want about a 10% EBITDA margin. So whatever the difference is, that's our marketing budget.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
Absolutely lovely business model. They can basically make as much... profit is a figure they can predetermine. They say, well, that's the amount of profit we want to make, so we'll spend X amount on marketing. And, of course, the marketing is not only maintaining the business, it's driving the growth.
Yeah.
So it's got a beautiful business model that throws off cash as it expands, and they can grow at whatever pace they like. And I think what was very interesting from the conference, from the analyst meeting, is that it's obvious that management want to expand it faster.
Yeah.
They said, we found that by reducing selling prices just a bit, only shaving like, you know, 0.5% or 1% off gross margin from, you know, 62% down to maybe 61% or 60% gross margin, they said that has a pretty dramatic effect on sales. So in other words, you've got, you know, your demand is very elastic, it's very price sensitive.
Mm.
So what I think they're going to go for is actually to run at a lower profit temporarily to really drive the top line. And the other interesting thing is,
what are they going to do with all their cash?
I don't know.
So fast and it's all positive cash flow, they're going to just build up that 60 million to 100 million pretty short, pretty quickly.
Yeah, actually, no, thinking about it, I do know what they're going to do, because I remember now. They said at the AGM they're going to seek authority to do a share buyback. So they could buy back up to 10% of the company's shares using the surplus cash.
And what's the market cap on it?
Let me look it up. 250 to 300 million range. Something
okay,
like that.
So if they buy shares, if they buy a stock back, it's not going to reduce the liquidity too much.
No, that's right. Well, having said that, the owners, the founders still own about 50%, so it's not that. Oh, 306 million market cap.
Right. Okay.
At 27p. I could see that getting back to the IPO price of 50p in the not too distant future, because the other really interesting catalyst for upside on this is, and you'll be amazed at this if you didn't know, they don't have an app.
Oh yes,
it's incredible. So people are on their mobile phones sort of going
looking at
the website through Safari, and then, you know, they have to, when they get home, they have to go onto a desktop or a laptop to actually order. Well, I mean, think how many people you're losing because
so how come they haven't got an app? They just haven't got around to it yet.
Wow, so, I mean, I nearly fell off the chair when
yeah, Ben.
And it was so funny. Kamani, the founder, he's just got an Asian guy, broad Manchester accent, and he hardly spoke at all during the analyst meeting. It was all the CFO and the buying director, Carol Kane, and he just chirped in when they were talking about the app. He said, I can't tell you that we've even got a shit app. We just haven't got any app at all. and then at the last conference call, one of the analysts said, Kamani's shitometer was going off at the last meeting. he's got quite a reputation for colourful language. He's not your typical CEO of a listed company at all.
Wow.
He's just an experienced rag trader. Really knows what he's doing. So I'm very excited about that. But some online fashion retailers, when the app can generate 30% or more of their turnover.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I totally agree, yeah.
So Boohoo's app is literally days away. They said it's in final testing now, and I think that could be a very nice catalyst maybe even, and Peel Hunter do very good research on Boohoo, and they're saying the forecasts now are so conservative that the next move is probably going to be up.
What's the shares now?
The share price is 27p. They've got about 5p a share in net cash.
Yeah.
So 20% of that. So 22p you're paying for the business. Consensus forecast is for about 1.1p earnings this year, 1.35 next year.
Where do you think you can get to? What's your sort of like your target price on it?
Well, I mean, I think it should be on a PE of about 30, which may sound bonkers, but when you're growing your top line at sort of 30% or more, which they are, and you've got international sales building. I mean, they're starting to gain traction in the US.
So possible 40p target prices, I mean.
Oh yeah, 40 to 50p, I think is sensible. Yeah, and the last announcement I think was a game changer, because it said, okay, the profit warning was a one off because the IPO expectations were too high.
Mm.
You know, the business is actually absolutely fine, and everybody would love it if it hadn't been for the fact that it was originally priced too high as IPO. Well, I think that mentality is fading now, and I think people who wanted out, I think there's still an overhang.
Mm.
I mean, the advisors told me there isn't. They said everyone who wants to be out is out in terms of the institutions, but I'm not sure that's right, because I think there's heavy selling in the market mopping up all the buys. Sorry, I'm rambling a bit. Let's move on to the next stuff.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Do you want to have a brief update on Service Power?
Yeah, Service Power, I mean, basically, it wasn't doing great, the shares, when we spoke last, and it's actually lower than it was when we spoke to before. I think we spoke last time, it was about 5p, and it's 4p, and they put out,
4p, yeah.
They had a really tough last half year, which has reset the bar. Basically, it was a profit warning. Things have taken longer to come through than they hoped. The positive side is they're doing more SaaS revenue, and they're churning out some of their lower margin business. The balance sheet is still okay. They've still got net cash. The one big difference which has happened is their number one competitor in the States, a company called Click Software, has just been bought out by private equity on a 3x sales multiple. So these guys do exactly the same thing as a service power. And the,
so that would value this at over four times its current price then?
Well, absolutely.
13 million turnover.
Click software is not profitable. It's just going into profitability, which is about the same level as service power. So if you ran the same multiples and assume that they've got some quasi-convertible debt, if you assume that that converted at the conversion price, which is what you'd if it happened, and say, on a potential acquisition, then you'd get a share price of 18p. So there's significant upside, but it obviously didn't do itself any favours by issuing a profit warning at the start of the year.
No.
It comes down to execution. They've got good technology, but you know, it's taken longer for the business model to happen. So, and there are a number of anecdotal things happening that are definitely positive. Like they got put in the visionary quadrant of for Gartner's Magic Quadrants, and they got some awards for their M2M technology, which interfaces with their service power software. The financials haven't yet caught up with those positive industry measures and those positive industry business developments. So there won't be a blockbuster year for this year. But if they hit where they get to, where they need to, then they should give them a good position for 2016. I actually think what will happen is likewise with Trispl. I actually think Service Power is going to get bought out because they are the only now independent software provider in the in this whole area of service provision for field services. So it's like a trophy, it's like a strategic asset because Toa, which was another competitor to Service Power, got bought a couple of years back or 18 months by Oracle. As I say, Qlik's just been bought out, so they are the last one. So I actually think it hasn't been a great experience for me. I've got quite a few shares in them, and I've clearly lost a lot of money on them so far. But there's no reason. I'm absolutely not selling because I think the upside is much bigger than the downside. But again, this is a very, very small company. Market cap is only about £8 million. Exactly. So,
I must admit, I'm not keen on this one, but. I do take on board
All I would say is that for investors who, like myself, who've got money, you need a thick skin, you need more of a longer term view, and you need to be it's like anything, you need to believe in this area is going to be get consolidation and growth. But it's like, 8 million market cap business. I mean, that's still peanuts. In the retail space, we're probably talking of a couple of stores, sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Chain of news agents. So, it's not a huge business. And anything where you have a single product, it can go very good, and it can go, obviously bad. So, again, I think it comes back to sort of like, again, investment principles in small caps. You do need a fairly broad profile to then, with the winners, obviously, offset the losers, and overall you'll make good money. But there's no way that if you're going into, you're operating in the small cap sector, and let's say you're looking for, IRRs of 15% plus, then, you're not going to eat, every single one's going to be a winner. So you've got your portfolio, as long as your portfolio moves in the right direction, that's great. But you've got to accept that your hit rate, if you move into the smaller cap sector, is going to be lower than it would be if you went in a really big, smart, large cap and you were just happy just to go for a 4 or 5%, IRR on it.
Right, we've got loads more stuff to cover.
Yes,
should we just do two or three bullet points on
these? Yeah, please
so
do,
we can
yeah.
rattle through them.
Yeah.
And I'm just reading from the list we covered last time. So Debenhams, I don't have a strong view on. I don't know if you looked at that one. I was bullish, but it's gone up quite a bit. I think I probably am still mildly bullish, but I don't hold any.
Some of my people I speak to are bullish on it, but I just never really physical retailers. I just don't like it because if on a down cycle you get stung with all these operating leases. But you're the best guy to understand this because you have your background.
Well, they do have a huge online sales. Well, I was staggered when I saw how much. I can't remember the figure, but it's you're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions. High, not far off a billion in online turnover. Debenhams doing.
Okay.
Yeah,
if I had the choice, I'd go for Boohoo rather than Debenhams.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Now, Space and People, there was an announcement last week that was mildly positive, I think, wasn't there? I had a contract renewal and 1 year. Any thoughts on that? I mean, I like that one. I think it's recovering nicely. And
well, it looks cheap. I don't know. I still haven't got my head around. Is it cheap for a reason, or is that actually an opportunity?
They absolutely screwed things up last year, didn't they? They had two profit warnings, so I think it's still the fallout from that. But I think the business is getting back on track.
Would you buy any?
Well, I still hold. I've held it for a couple of years. I did buy some more, actually, when it
went down.
Yeah, when it went down. I think the management are good. It's in a nice niche. Well, I say management are good. Maybe they're not that good, but, you know, at 8 to 10 million market cap, you're not going to get world-class management, are you?
No.
But they created this business from scratch. They identified a niche that no one else is in, so... That's more than I've done. You know, I haven't created a business like that. So
you've got your own one now. Your small cap reviewer business. You're the only person in the country doing it. So you know, you're doing a fantastic job. Keep it up, mate. Don't stop.
Thanks, Paul. And then a couple of others I mentioned briefly last time. Empresaria, I still hold. I think that's reasonably cheap.
On the recruiters, all the upcycle and. I mean, I would agree with you. I think, you know, they're doing very, very well. You just look at the UK economy and, you know, the level of employment down in the States is down. Another one, which is quite interesting, is Matchtech. I don't own them.
I hold that one. I like that one.
Yeah.
They do have some oil and gas exposure, though, don't they, as the recruitment.
Yes, they do.
They recruit technical staff or something, don't they, for various sectors, one of which is oil and gas. Yeah. They bought Networkers, didn't they? Networkers is national.
Absolutely. I mean, I think with all, you know, again, you know, come back to the original point we made, when it comes to sort of like the market overall now, with obviously, you know, reasonably well bid, it's looking for good quality companies that you can basically say, right, that's a class act. And then it's a matter of hitting the right price for you to buy. And I think all, you know, I'd put a lot of these on the sort of the watch list as, if we get a pullback, you then, you know, you're looking for a pile-in type of opportunity.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's pretty much what I did with Matchtech. I wasted it. Because my theory on that was when it did the Networkers bid, it was for a while, Matchtech was one of the biggest shorted shares in the UK. And I thought, well, why is that? Because it's a cheap stock. But, of course, you know why, don't you?
Yes,
I do. It was the Networkers holders locking in the because they were in something very illiquid, and they're now in a much more liquid share, so... You've had a sort of stream for the exit, I think.
People basically were selling, knowing that they're going to get some more shares.
Yes.
You know, so, and then, because it was obviously, you know, they raised some, you know, the shares, so they basically sold ahead of the actual joining the company. But
that's created a buying opportunity for me. Because
yes, it did, totally agree,
Artificial selling, which depressed the price. So, yeah, I like Matchtech. I think it's a nice business. And Dot Digital, I mentioned briefly, not cheap, but...
Is that for the marketing software, software?
Yeah, it is. It's clever software for doing, I think, sort of email newsletters and things like that. Software as a service, recurring revenue, monthly fees. Very nice business. I like that one.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. That goes into my class act, wait for the right opportunity to get in. I missed the boat, basically.
Well, I bought it around this price, actually, funny
enough. Oh, really? Okay.
Not long ago. Yeah, I think it's worth a look at the current price.
Okay.
Port Merion, I sold out of PMP.
They've done really well, didn't they?
Yeah, I'd like to go back into that one, actually. I'm hoping it's going to dip. Sprue Aegis has come off a loss, hasn't it? The smoke alarms.
I haven't seen what the shares have done, actually.
I actually came across
them in, I wouldn't believe this, in 2003. They were
a
spin out of Warwick University. And they were on they weren't on AIM, they were on the other exchange, which is even more illiquid. And they only had one product.
Oh, yes, they were on ISDX, weren't they?
They only had one product, which was this innovative smoke detector you stuck in a light bulb.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, since then, they've exploded. It's not the product, literally, but...
not literally, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my friends are in this one, and I'm within it myself. I bought it about 90p and sold at about £2. So again, same story, I sold too early. They peaked, looking at the chart, they peaked about £3.60 in April, March this year.
Yeah.
And they've dropped, they've come down a lot now, down to £2.67, even though the results are actually quite good. but I think the issue is that it's whether that level of profitability is sustainable, because apparently it's being driven by demand in France, where
legislation change, isn't
legislative,
it?
So, but I think it's starting to look interesting again, actually, at this level. 4.1% dividend yield as well. So I don't hold currently, but I might look at that one again.
Yeah, one thing I would say about these type of stocks, you know, clever smoke detectors, and it's a worry that they're only raising because I think you get a lot of it with the small cap businesses, is that in China and Asia, they're effectively flattening the hell out of a lot of markets, i.e. sort of bringing the price down, because they realise that they're not in business to make money, they're in business to employ people.
Yeah, and like so they did with solar panels.
Exactly, and so they just build factory, and of what happened, they're not interested in what price they sell, or start anything they can, you know, and so it just decimates the market. And then electronics and smoke detectors are chucked into the same boat, so you tend to, clearly it's doing well, and it's so strong a niche that it's protected at the moment, but unless they've got something really, really innovative, and smoke detectors to me is not innovative.
They have got some new products coming through, which were internet enabled apparently. Which is quite interesting. Say if you're a major landlord, you can put all those in, then you'll be able to go into an app and look on your screen to make sure they're all functioning correctly, which of course will save a fortune in terms of not having to send a man round to check them all manually. So I think there is interesting stuff there. The other thing I don't like about this company is that they sell some of their stock is sold on a sort of distribution agreement from a US company.
Right.
And I don't, and they pay quite a substantial sort of annual fee, I think, for this. And I'm not entirely comfortable with that. I like companies to own their own IP. I think Spirii just might be worth another look.
Yeah.
I might have a dig into that one. We probably haven't got time to cover the last five or six stocks, but should we talk about some new stock ideas?
Yeah, sure, please do,
Do you want to fire away with a couple?
I think one of your top of the list is Norcross, which is...
Yes, results last week were reassuring. I don't think they were great results, but it's very cheap, isn't it? PE of 9, I think.
Well, I've been watching it for some time. The only thing I don't like about it is the pension.
Yes, yeah, that is the thorn in the side, definitely. But it's manageable in terms of the overpayments, isn't it? I think just over 2 million overpayments they make, and they generate about 20-odd million EBITDA.
Yeah.
It's not cramping their style in terms of the dividends.
And is the South Africa thing sorted itself out?
The South African business was the standout strong performer, actually.
Yeah.
It's recovered nicely. And the interesting thing is, one of the reasons the shares sold off, because the South African business is about 40% of turnover.
Yeah.
People were worried that obviously the South African rand dropped a lot, and everyone thought, oh God, that's going to be really bad for Norcross. But it's actually been, it's been the opposite. The South African business is actually doing very well, despite the rand. I think the like-for-like sales in one of the South African businesses are up about 30%. And even though the currency effect brought that right down, it was obviously operationally geared within South Africa. So the disappointing part of the Norcross business, and it's bathroom fittings and tiles.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
The most disappointing bit was the UK retail side.
Wow, I'd expect that ballistic.
No, they're doing well on the trade side, the UK trade, the house building side and so on.
And why is that? Is it just because...
I don't know. I mean, they say, consumer confidence is... but everyone else is saying, well, actually, consumer confidence is improving. So they must be suffering from competitive pressures.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other explanation. But having said that, you know, this stock's so cheap. And I saw that Gervais Williams... Meissen group went over 12% last week.
Okay, that's positive.
Yeah, I think there's still an overhang though from a seller. It seems to be a sort of permanent overhang in Norcross. But I like that. I think that's got 25p written all over it. It's 17p at the moment.
Yeah.
Laura Ashley is one of my favourites at the moment. ALY.
You like the patterns, do you?
The product is actually very nice. I mean, on their website, it's not as sort of fuddy-duddy or old lady.
No, it's got a good brand. It's got a very good brand.
Yeah, no, it's the figures I like. I mean, net cash is paying 6.5% dividend yields, which I think is sustainable. It looks sustainable to me.
Yeah.
It's got net cash, I said that, haven't I? And then the last set of results were very good.
Mm.
And a good outlook statement as well. And it's only on a PE of about 11 or 12. So I think that's significant. I think it's 30 or 40%.
Yeah, I haven't really looked. I don't know about that one yet.
Yeah, it's worth a look, that one. Flybe is starting to recover.
Now, yeah, I've been tracking Flybe, yeah.
That's been a painful ride for me, but yeah, it's very interesting, you know, because I'm starting to look a little bit more at technical analysis now for time.
Really?
Buys and sells.
Oh, you're well, mad. You're crazy,
well,
man.
Well, you say that, but the interesting thing is, I think if you've got a fundamentally positive view on a stock, but you wait for a buy signal from the chart, then I think that's improving your chances of a successful outcome.
Yes, I would agree.
Now, on Flybe, you see, Richard Crowe, who I've got a lot of time for, he's a very accomplished trader who I've interviewed a couple of times. He said to me, you know, he likes Flybe, but he's going to wait for the chart to give a signal. So I thought, okay, let's see what happens. Well, anyway, the other day, about a week ago, it broke through on the upside, the 50-day moving average.
Okay, yeah.
On high volume. Now, yeah. Richard has always said that type of thing is you look for unusually large volume and a key level is taken out. Well, anyway, so I thought, okay, I'll quadruple the size of my position.
Wow. It
bloody shot up about 20-odd percent within days.
Great.
So it just shows, doesn't it? Even if the technicals don't work, if enough people think they do and follow them, then it becomes self-fulfulling, doesn't it? Yeah.
I've never, to be perfectly honest, I've never had, I mean, I would agree, it adds to the whole understanding about, I don't think I've got the ability to read them that well, because, as I said, I tend to buy too early, I catch a bit of a falling knife, and then they later recover.
Yeah, I do.
And sell too early, I way before the top, but that's part and parcel of being a value investor, as long as you make money in the interim things and you buy and sell, I'm happy. But I'm never going to get the bottom. I'm never going to get the top.
No, I mean, what I'm doing now is I'm starting to pay a bit more attention to the technicals. And I'm, you know, if the chart sends a buy signal on something I like, I'll buy. You know, I'll already hold them on fundamentals, but I'll buy some more once the chart starts to get positive, and likewise in terms of selling.
I tend to buy on negative technicals just because it gets so disliked, the share, that it overshoots,
and
investors get so annoyed about it they just want to get rid of it and just clear their own holding, and that if you fundamentally have called the right trade, i.e. it's that you've spoken to management and you've done the numbers and it looks as though the fundamentals are moving in the right direction, then it's the best opportunity is that when the technicals are worse you then pick up.
I mean, that's a very good point, actually, on small caps. That's when you can get the stock, the amount of stock you want.
Yes.
So the problem is, if you wait for the chart to give a positive signal, you probably won't be able to buy in any size.
Absolutely right,
caps.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah. That's a good
point. I had to move, I had that with Tristle, because when they hit about 2 years ago, they hit like 22p, 23p, and I was thinking, the technicals were terrible. And one of a large institution sold, I think it was an 8 or 9% stake at level and just got out, and there was plenty of volume you could have picked up, and I was thinking, should I take it or not? And I thought, okay, no, I'm not going to. And the current chairman took it, he bought it out, he basically is a founder, and took on the stock.
Oh, really?
And of course, once that happened, and then they had a better set of numbers, it was just impossible, you know, it was very difficult to pick any volume up at all.
Yeah.
So it's great to sort of follow the technicals, and if people want to do that, I'm not having a go at it, because I think a lot of people can make money out of technicals. I'm just saying I'm a value investor. I'm just not the person who
not
would.
Your cup of tea.
I don't make any money out of it. In fact, if I end up losing money. I mean, we talked earlier on about pressure technologies. I actually believed a bit of the technicals. I thought that because the share price was increasing before ahead of the results, actually they might come out with something a bit surprise upside. It was just a bump.
Yeah.
It was basically the technicals were saying, is what you rightly say, this is a bit of neddy retail investors who were buying into a theme that they didn't really understand. And actually the fundamentals were much worse than what the technicals
were. I think that's right. With small cap, the smaller you get, the less
reliable
technicals are, I think. Yeah, less reliable, that's the word. Yeah, because you just take one or two nitwits who haven't got a clue what they're doing, who start aggressively buying or selling, and it can create any pattern you like on the chart, can't it?
But I do like Flybe. I don't hold shares, but it's definitely one I'm tracking.
Okay, you do like it, do you?
I do. Well, I just think because you look at Ryanair and you look at EasyJet, and they're doing brilliantly, and the multiples are very high, and you know there's no I've flown Flybe many a time, and it's a good airline. There's no doubt about it. They've just got a couple of legacy issues They've got the underutilized aircraft, which they've got to sort out. Once that's done, then they should do very well. And they've got those legacy call options on the crude oil price. And once that goes through, they'll start benefiting.
That's working its way through. Yeah.
There's no reason why it shouldn't do well.
Yeah, I agree. I think given a bit of patience, that one, I think we'll get back to the placing price, which I think was about £1.10. They've shot up from about 55p to about 70p in the last week. There was a very good webinar on their website in the investor relations section where basically they videoed the last analyst meeting. And it's unedited, and it's very, very informative. And the CEO does seem to be on top of all the issues, I have to say. I think that one's quite interesting. Have you looked at Aldermore?
I haven't.
Challenger Bank.
I just don't like banks, but this isn't...
I don't.
Yeah, but as a Challenger Bank, it's a probably different perspective.
Yeah, well, that's why I bought it. I mean, I bought a few. It's not cheap. It does look pricey, but it's very interesting in that it's got no legacy issues.
Yeah.
It's got no branch network, so its cost structure is far better. And it's just a straightforward savings and loan organisation.
Yes.
And it's growing at a hell of a pace.
My only caveat I would say is that I've looked a lot at the P2P sector, you know, the new person-to-person loan, crowdfunding, stuff like that. Yeah. And it is hugely competitive at the moment for loans. There's so much money supply swilling into the whole lending situation, whether that's consumer loans, small cap loans, you know, medium or large cap loans. And the yields, even on effectively junk debt, at record lows, not because of credit quality, simply because the businesses, you know, basically so much money coming into the sector. And so it just smells to me, this whole area of lending is just, and that's why they're growing so fast, is that actually they're probably pricing the risk of a credit event later on, you know, without that much wiggle room, without much safety margin.
Yeah, well, the bear case on Aldermore is that they are basically getting stuffed with the low quality business that the big banks have turned away. If you were being
I think if you look at the whole credit spectrum from crap credit quality to your top level AAA, I actually think the whole lot of it is really well bid. Is really well. The yields on it are unbelievably good. And I just don't. Yeah. I actually think the banking sector is going through another moment of madness in what the pricing is.
Yeah, well, at the 1PM, have you looked at that one? The ticker is 1PM. Well, that's a nice little growth stock. It's an asset lender to SMEs.
Yes.
You know, typically their customers will be something like a hair salon or something, or a sandwich shop, you know, who typically want to borrow about $20,000 to buy the equipment. Well, they're putting out really good figures, and Simon Thompson in the Investors Chronicle is writing bullish articles about them all the time. But I looked at it and thought to myself, well, hang on, you know, they are making super normal margins.
Yes.
Because they've had the market more or less to themselves. The banks pulled out of asset lending. Well, that's going to change.
Well, it's changing.
Yeah, people are good, based on what you just said.
Yes.
Their margins are going to compress.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's probably not going to be able to continue delivering profit growth on quite the same sort of scale as it has been, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, that might take a while to see through in the figures as well. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if you just look at the numbers, typically when you launch a new business or a startup company, one in three fail within the first 2 years. These companies that are startup businesses, if you look at mini bonds and, you know, just P2P business lending, they're getting unsecured debt or loans anywhere between like 5% and 8%. If you think a third of them are going to go bust and they're getting lending between 5% and 8%, you think,
that's
actually
crazy.
the math doesn't work.
No, well, I think crowdfunding is the next big thing that's going to blow up, because I have to say, I mean, I've looked at some of the equity crowdfunding sites, and I mean, the valuations are absolutely taking the piss. I mean, they really are. You know, the fundamental flaw with it is that the vendor sets the price. You know, and the buyers of the equity are basically muppets who just, you know, read a story and watch a video and think, oh, I'll stick a grand in that or 500 quid or whatever, and they're being completely licked off, because also they often get a different class of shares with no preemption rights.
Yeah. I mean, they can
be diluted to nothing on a whim of the... Oh, just shocking.
I think the investors have got to be very aware about what price, what risk and price they're paying. I actually think the exchanges at the moment, albeit there are a lot of them, you know, you're going to get, it's like anything with the internet, you're going to get winners and losers, I think.
Yes.
And clearly, like, things like Lending Club out of the States has done brilliantly, and there's number ones like Cedars in the UK, and
Crowdcube, I think.
They're all doing very, very well, making lots of money. But you're right, they haven't, that industry hasn't yet been through a credit event. It hasn't gone through the economic cycle. But at the moment, if you have been an investor or an early stage investor in one of the exchanges, then you're probably doing very, very well. If you're one of the investors at the moment on the exchanges and you're paying top dollar and not really judging the risk, then you're probably heading for a bath.
Well, I think they're lambs to the slaughter. I really do in most cases. I mean, I looked through a few of the pitches on a crowdfunding site the other day, and the valuations were just nuts. There were things were being valued at 10 or 20 times what I would probably pay for them. And you just think, God, startups being valued at £2 or £3 million. A couple of guys fresh out of university, making ice cream or something.
Yeah, no, it's not a place I'm investing at the moment.
We've probably run out of time, Paul, haven't we? Any other last sort of...
No, I'll say that, there's been a couple of companies which have had profit warnings which are really low at the moment, and I'd say they're worth keeping an eye on. But you're buying value traps, or are you buying opportunities? I mean, Thysis, for instance, which had a horror show.
It's
got a decent balance sheet, decent technology, but is it going to have another stumble? I don't know. It's come down from a pound to about 50p, hasn't it, or something like that, or 54.
They did bounce, so I think they're back up to 60, mid 60s. I did like that business, but the profit warning was awful. I mean, they really, really screwed up on basics of pricing a contract wrong. I mean, I think that's unforgivable.
Yeah. No, I don't own them either. They were illiquid as well, which was the other thing which put
I discovered the other day I've got about 700 quid worth in my pension.
Okay.
I didn't know it was there. I think it was I tried to sell a bigger holding a while back, and we couldn't get them all away. So, any other similar
things? No, I would hold the positions you're comfortable with your stocks, and put a good strong watch list together of good quality business that you want at the right price, and just be patient myself. It's very tempting to do things that are unnatural, and to force events, and I've done that with the trading side, and some of it works, some of it hasn't worked. But I just think if you're not careful, you could try and be a bit of a busy fool it doesn't mean you don't do work. You do plenty of work, and you've got to understand what the valuations and the risks and stuff. But I do, as I say at the start, I'm actually more, even though shares have gone up by 10%, i.e. it's getting supposed to be more bullish, I'm more bearish now than I was 6 months ago, simply because I just think valuations overall, I mean, you've got to look at the bellwethers. I mean, I used to work for Unilever for 8 years, and typically that was a 14 PE stock. It's 24 at the moment.
That's crazy, isn't
it? Well, it did absolutely matter, but Diageo and Reckitt's and P&G and all these other consumer bellwethers, which are just GDP stocks, they just dealt with GDP. Because of the low interest rates, it just meant that investors have jumped on board as a quasi-dividend stroke, very, very, very safe bond stock. I use those types of things as a measure, as a benchmark of bullishness. And again, you've got to look at what happened last week. Fitbit, massively overvalued IPO, went up 50% in the day. I mean,
America is looking into euphoric now, isn't it?
It is.
The final stage of the bull market before a crash, maybe.
So I just think. You don't be. I'm not being overly bullish. Because I've got my cash holding, I'm effectively short of the market. Still got a big portion of equities. Don't get me wrong. If they went south, it'd be painful for me. But overall, I've got a big cash holding because I
55% in cash in a way you want the market to drop, don't you? Because then you've got some bargains.
Not in my stocks, I don't want to drop.
No, you want to have your cake and eat.
Yeah, exactly. Other people's stocks, I don't mind. I'll buy those. What about you?
Well, I'm fully invested and actually slightly geared at the moment.
Oh, wow!
Probably isn't very sensible, actually, but I just overall feel this Greek thing is deterring a lot of people from buying.
Yeah, it's deterring me.
Yeah, so I think that, flipping it round the other way,
yes.
It's a known problem that the politicians and financiers have had 7 years to plan for.
Yeah.
So if and when it does, there is some sort of cathartic sort of climax to the whole situation, yes, that's going to destabilise things in the short term, but it could even then trigger a big rally.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of looking at Greece and thinking maybe that's actually an upside catalyst after the initial shock to the system.
Yeah.
Because people will then have the confidence to, once ever the dust has settled, people will have the confidence to buy into them. You know, there'll be a fresh wave of money coming into the market.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't, maybe I'm being wildly, maybe if that's a sign of euphoria that I'm seeing negatives as positives. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, the other thing is I am keeping my eye on the exits, you know.
Yeah.
If the financial system generally looks like it's starting to really seriously wobble, I wouldn't have any compunction at all in just ditching, you know, maybe half of my portfolio in a day or something.
The only problem with small caps is that on the first sign of liquidity or market distress, liquidity dries up in them.
Yes, especially this time of year.
And the shares shoot down very quick. I mean, you saw that before Christmas with AIM obviously getting absolutely trousered. So you don't always get an opportunity. You're doing your big stocks, and you can sell your liquid ones, your mega caps, but you can't sell a lot of the time. If you've got a big holding or something, you haven't got a cat and hell's chance of getting out. Not any price, anyway.
No, I agree. And especially if the summer liquidity dries up anyway, doesn't it?
I mean, I remember 2008 and 2000.
Oh, God.
And that was the end of 2007 and 2008 were the worst moments of my life.
Same here. It was catastrophic for me.
Yeah, well, there you go.
No, it was. I mean,
you couldn't sell, could you? That was the point.
No, it was just for me. I was just watching myself just hemorrhaging cash, and there's nothing I could do about
no,
it.
No, exactly.
So, God, yeah, no. My
I never want to go back to that.
Oh, no. I have to learn my lessons the hard way, unfortunately. I don't know why. That's just my personality. But, yeah. Okay, well, on that note, should we sign off?
Yep, sounds great.
Thanks ever so much. Really appreciate your time.
No problem, Paul.
We'll speak again in a few months.
Happy investing.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye. Yes.
Bye.